He left Narime in charge, and, of course, Castle Tartus, which was named after the city it protected. Each of these fortresses had a fully active demonic portal. They needed to be defended, manned, and used to instill peace in the surrounding region. Anna's army and the local guards relied on him to provide a calming presence to the region. Ordinarily, Nathan wouldn't have that much to do. Bastions typically defended their fortresses, trained their champions and soldiers, and stayed out of politics. Taking care of the region was the job of the nobles. That was, theoretically, why they were nobles. But Nathan cared dearly for Anna. She had stepped out of her comfort zone for him, and was trying her best to stay afloat. If she needed his help to protect and manage the region's military, he'd provide it. Although he wasn't sure if she was serious about marriage. She'd teased him more than a few times about when he'd become Nathan Von Clare. Given his worries about the potential end of the world, he chose not to focus much on it. In the end, that meant Nathan found himself inundated with as much paperwork as Anna. His tasks were many. Run training programs for both her army and his own knights. Find and recruit long-term soldiers within the region, which typically meant beastkin. Establish strong logistics and command structures to quell bandits and withstand future disruption. And, of course, he needed to pay for it all, feed and house everyone, build and rebuild forts and warehouses that were often in a state of disrepair, and maintain good relations with the people of the region, all while political instability rose within the empire. Fortunately, Nathan was no stranger to doing this. He had overseen the evacuation of entire countries more than once. Being able to prevent that from happening made all the work worthwhile in his mind. He had seen off far too many people in courageous last stands for one lifetime, let alone two. The downside was that he lacked many of the people who helped him manage things back then. He was stretched thin in terms of champions. Faye, Sunstorm, and Sen were warriors, not clerks. Narime could do the paperwork, but if Nathan so much as waved a form at her, she'd teleport halfway across Domar. Seraph carried most of the load for Nathan, but even her master administrator abilities were being taxed. As such, most of the work followed Nathan wherever he worked. He made it a priority to train more clerks and also to find more champions who wouldn't suffer a mental breakdown when left behind a desk for a day. At least he had some very soft and lovely stress relief while staying with Anna. Anna moaned as he pulled out of her. Her back was arched and her rear faced him while her face pressed into a pillow. Nathan settled next to her naked body as she settled into a quivering mess. "Not going to clean up?" he asked. She made an unintelligible noise. He chuckled and rubbed her bare leg. Although she smiled, her lack of reaction made it clear she was spent. Minutes passed in silence as they lay together. Slowly, she drifted off to sleep, almost as if she had eaten a big meal and needed an afternoon nap. Technically, she had eaten a big meal. Something glowed softly on one of Anna's bedstands. They were in her bedroom, which was absolutely palatial. He rose and padded over to the source of the light. It was a small hand mirror. One of the jewels encrusted on its rim glowed. Alice had left him with this mirror. It was a magical communication device that allowed him to speak with her. When the jewels glowed, it indicated that Alice was trying to contact him, or that she wanted to contact him at a specific time. Right now, she seemed to be using her mirror. So he picked up his own, sat down, and activated it. "Oh, you are there," she said, as her face and upper body appeared. Then she blushed as her eyes darted lower. "And not wearing anything?"
"I can put a shirt on if you'd like, but I was with Anna a moment ago," he replied.
An odd expression crossed Alice's face. Her lips tried to pout,
but instead decided to thin. The rest of her face became a little more taut.
"Is she there?" Alice asked, lowering her voice.
"Sleeping."
Alice blinked. "It's mid-afternoon."
"I'm not sure I should go into more detail about what we were doing, given you are the Imperial Princess."
Nathan coughed.
"But she's sleeping now."
Alice's eyebrow shot up. She muttered, "Lucky Anna."
"I'm sorry?" Nathan asked.
Had she said what he thought she said?
"Did I say that aloud?"
Alice's face paled, and her expression became one of mortification.
Then she put on the broadest, fakest smile that Nathan had ever seen on her. "I understand you've been busy, Nathan. From what I hear, you've become a general."
"I'm still only a bastion in service to my duchess," Nathan said, but his tone was wry.
"Cute. Is that what you tell all the nobles who ask why you're in command of Anna's army?"
"Pretty much.
What are they going to say? That Anna's not allowed to give me orders? That I can't command soldiers outside the Imperial Army?"
He shook his head.
"Besides, it's mostly just busy work. Logistics, recruitment, construction."
"Why the rush, then?" Alice asked.
Because Nathan knew from experience that these things mattered the most when everything went to hell. Not that he could put it like that. "A lot of this is just invisible bureaucracy," he said. "The sort of things that nobles take care of themselves. Without them, chaos spreads. Anna's replaced a lot of the people that used to do these things, and I don't want everything to get out of hand."
"People like Tonius," Alice said.
"And his supporters. When his retainers fled, a lot of knowledge vanished with them. Seraph is one of the few people who knows how the place works. Some of the other regents are helping, but they have their own problems to handle. Plus, Anna's competition. If she blows it, then they think they can take her land."
Alice scowled. "For about 5 seconds, until the Nationalists take it back."
"Yes, but that's not what they see."
Nathan shrugged.
"I just need to keep things from getting out of control. The faster I move, the harder it is for others to instigate problems."
"Tarbin," Alice said.
"And others," Nathan said.
She frowned and made a show of chewing over his words. This wasn't the first time he'd put it in her head that there was more going on. Alice was good friends with Charlotte, who was the princess of the kingdom of Falmir. All indications were that Falmir was involved in this mess. They were doing a good job at staying hidden, but had nearly overplayed their hand during the Cascade. Unfortunately, that meant that Nathan couldn't outright tell Alice that Falmir and Charlotte were untrustworthy. For one thing, he didn't believe it himself. He had spent his life supporting Charlotte in his original world. But many things had changed when he came to this new world. Ignoring reality was foolish.
"Fair enough," she said. "But shouldn't Anna be handling this? I feel you could be getting a lot more done if you were more focused and not..."
Alice's face reddened. "Helping her sleep."
"Call it mutual stress relief," Nathan said.
Alice muttered something in reply that he didn't quite hear, but almost sounded like she had repeated his words back to him. The redness of her face implied she had said something inappropriate, so he didn't pry.
"More to the point, Anna doesn't have much experience with military affairs."
"I do.
Things get done a lot faster," he explained. "I understand logistics, recruitment, training regimens, and can instruct others how to set these up."
"Huh. You're strangely experienced in this." Alice tilted her head. "It's just like when you organized the conference between the Empire and the Federation. I'm absolutely certain nobody in the Academy taught you this."
"I was a count for a decade, more or less," he said,
not meeting her gaze.
Ah, yes. I recall the part where your father's county was a captured region of an enemy nation and needed a swift, firm hand to bring it under control, Alice said dryly. What a firm bed of experience you have, Bastian Nathan.
Why, thank you, Princess Alice, he replied without missing a beat.
She glared at him.
Do I ever get to find out how and why you know these things? Alice asked quietly, her voice barely above a whisper. I'm not stupid. Leopold and my father are using you in some grand scheme, despite the fact you should be some greenhorn bastion. Your champions trust you implicitly. People don't come out of nowhere with your skills and ability.
Nathan grimaced. Keeping secrets was beginning to make life difficult for him. Only a fool wouldn't realize he was more than he appeared. Before he had invaded the Federation, he had made the decision to use his full strength, even at the cost of standing out too much. Arguably, he had gone too far.
Sometimes secrets remain secrets for a reason, Alice, he said. That's why bastions take the oaths they do.
She stared at him for a long time. His skin prickled.
That's another trick you do, isn't it? She said, an odd smile crossing her face. It only just occurred to me. If you had other secrets, you only need to bring up your oath to Omria, and it makes it hard for me to question you without appearing unfaithful.
Smart girl.
Maybe, he said.
Ha ha, she said, her smile turning genuine.
It softened a moment later.
I may not be Anna, but, she trailed off, then coughed. The summer session of the Diet is approaching. Grandpa is about to sign a ceasefire with Trefom, and he wants to ask you to do something for him. Can you come to Alaik soon?
What had she been about to ask him? And what did it have to do with Anna?
You don't need to bring up the Emperor to get me to come to Alaik, he said gently.
Alice blushed and looked away. Had she always been so easily embarrassed? For that matter, she was wearing an absolutely stunning dress. He could only see the top of it, but it looked more expensive than his entire wardrobe combined. Diamond studs glittered in her ears, and her face looked made up.
No. He realized. Alice hadn't looked like this when she'd visited him at Garrick Pass.
The exception had been during the conference, but that had been a formal event between nations.
Thank you, she said, a slight giggle escaping her. I'm looking forward to seeing you then, Nathan. Try not to tire Anna out too much.
She paused, then pursed her lips.
And maybe we can get to know each other enough that you feel comfortable sharing those secrets not covered by your oath.
They said their final goodbyes before Alice vanished.
When Nathan lowered the mirror, he felt a presence. Instinctively, he summoned magical power from his closest binding stone in order to prepare a spell. Then he spun and saw nothing. Anna had turned over in her sleep. Her eyes remained closed, and she made adorable noises that he refused to tell her about.
No, Nathan realized. There was something here. A black door loomed in the corner of the room. That couldn't have been the presence, he sensed. Tossing on a set of clothes, he checked the door. Although Anna had an escape room, her bedroom only had one normal entrance. The door remained locked and magically warded. Despite that, Nathan peeked outside. The bedroom connected to the study, and from there to the palace proper.
My lord? Fire asked,
her red eyes almost glowing in the shadows of the room. The beastkin sat on one of the sofas, paperwork neatly stacked up in front of her. While she was working through some of it, Nathan spied what he suspected was a growing pile for Anna.
It's nothing, he said.
Fire tilted her head. As always, her attention fixated on him whenever he was nearby. He closed the door. Then, despite himself, he turned to face the imposing presence that he had been ignoring since arriving at Anna's palace. Kadria. She was the messenger that he made a deal with on that fateful night. While she had been the architect of his defeat, the opportunity she had given him was... No, he refused to accept it as a good thing. People he loved were dead. This wasn't the past, and his old lovers were never coming back. But he had hope, and an opportunity to prevent the world from becoming the nightmarish wasteland he had lived in. Kadria was his partner, like it or not. These black doors represented the entrance to her mental world. Nobody else could see them because Kadria was using Nathan's mind as an anchor in this world. He didn't fully understand it, to be honest, but he knew enough that the door shouldn't be here. Until now, they had only ever appeared close to binding stones. While Castle Tardis was close by, the palace was outside of its domain. If Kadria was here, then... Nathan drummed his fingers on his leg. The only way to find out what was happening was to go inside and talk to her. He walked up to the door, opened it, and stepped into the white void that appeared in front of him. A moment later, he appeared inside a small house. Until very recently, Kadria's mental world had been a strange place. Now it looked almost normal, if very strange to Nathan. The house consisted of three rooms. He stood inside a carpeted bedroom, which contained a very large plush bed and many bookshelves. The books were written in languages that Nathan didn't recognize. A tiled bathroom stood off to the side, with appliances that Kadria explained as extremely futuristic compared to his own. The other room was a combined kitchen and dining room, and contained similarly complex appliances. One of them was some sort of magical stovetop, which produced flames by turning a knob. Everything had color, texture, and looked like a complete object. A year ago, this room had nearly driven Nathan mad, as it had looked like the outlines of a room, rather than an actual place. Taking a deep breath, Nathan checked for Kadria. No sign of her. He stepped into the kitchen and saw another door. This one was made of an oddly familiar material. "Oh, damn, they're back," he muttered. Rubbing the bridge of his nose, Nathan opened the new door and stepped into the world of a different messenger. Chapter 5. Bright, hot sunlight beat down on him. He heard the laughter of children and distant chatter of people. The smell of grilled meat wafted through his nostrils. Instinctively, saliva built up in his mouth. His eyes adjusted, and he stared at his surroundings. He stood in a fenced, grassy field. Except the fence, sky, and sun looked like somebody had drawn them with chalk. The feeling of sunlight felt too real, however. "What have I told you about thinking too hard about this place?" Kadria's familiar voice snapped, pulling him from his thoughts. He stopped staring at the strange drawings and looked down. Three women stood nearby, around a strange assortment of furniture. All of them had curly horns protruding from their heads and bronzed skin. But that was where their similarities ended. Kadria sat on a wooden chair, wearing as little clothing as always. Platinum hoops and bangles hung off her body. Her black hair had grown out substantially since they first met, and nearly fell to her ass. Despite long familiarity with her, Nathan felt his body react. He hadn't seen her in natural lighting like this. Her bronzed skin glittered in the sunlight. Her thick, curvy thighs drew his eyes to them, which only made the nearly transparent material of her black silk panties more obvious. His cock knew what it wanted. Kadria's violet eyes narrowed, her red pupils shining, and she smirked at him.
Hey, pay attention to us, too, another voice shouted.
Our tits are way bigger than hers.
Yes, because that's all that matters in a woman, Kadria drawled.
Our tits are bigger than your entire body. So, yeah, it does matter, a huskier voice replied. We're real succubi.
Nathan sighed and looked over at the pair who demanded his attention. He knew them as the twins, Mora and Laura. Months ago, he had fought against them and won. Faye had even cut Laura in half, and he had watched as her body was incinerated in front of him. For whatever reason, Laura's response to being killed was to give him a tit job together with her twin sister, probably because they were succubi. The twins were identical, save for very minor differences. Both of them had incredibly beautiful and attractive figures. They had curves as far as the eye could see, tits larger than their heads, fleshy thighs thicker than their waists, long white hair past their asses. Nathan had to admit that while he found them irritating, he enjoyed looking at them. They were even more enjoyable to hold on to. Both Laura and Mora stared at him with broad grins and curved eyes. The way to tell them apart was their eyes. Both had red eyes, but Mora's sclera were pitch black. Of course, Mora also wore a black dress. At least, she normally did. Right now, both twins wore the same outfit, a tiny pair of blue shorts that strained to contain their asses, and a tube top that barely covered their breasts. Nathan plainly saw that they still didn't wear underwear, given how poorly their clothes covered them. Also, Mora was wearing an apron. "Are you cooking?" he asked her, staring at the strange steel appliance she stood in front of. The appliance looked like a big box with a flat top and a hood. The knobs along the front looked like much larger versions of what Nathan saw in Kadria's kitchen. Thick meat patties fried on top of it, spitting juices from time to time, and smoke billowed into the air. That explained the smell of grilled meat. "Yup, nothing better to do on a weekend than grill up some burgers," Mora said. She snapped some tongs together. "Burgers?" Nathan asked. Laura and Mora stared at him. Kadria snorted. "Hamburgers are a very modern invention. I don't think he knows what you're using, either." "Oh, my God," the twins said together. "Goddess," Nathan corrected automatically.
"Fuck that bitch," Laura said. "Literally."
Nathan tried not to think too hard about what she had just said. Laura grabbed Nathan and dragged him over to Mora. The two twins sandwiched him and directed his attention to the strange steel thing.
"I can't believe we'll get to see your first time eating a burger," Laura said. "Like, will you react like little kids do when they first bite into a cheeseburger? Or will it be more like when you stick your dick into a girl for the first time?"
Nathan wanted to scratch his head in discomfort, but he found his arms restrained by the busty succubi next to him. Instead, he stared at the delicious meat in front of him.
"So, what is this?" he asked.
"It's an outdoor grill. I think they call it other things elsewhere. When we went to Australia as exchange students, they called it a BBQ," Mora said.
Nathan refrained from asking what an Australia was.
"So it cooks things?" he asked.
"Yup. It runs on gas, although we're using magic in here, and creates flames. The meat tastes so much better. Although I guess you cook everything with flames in your backward little world."
Mora tilted her head. As she shrugged, she flipped the meat patties. Nathan watched as fat dripped through grates in the grill. Flames licked the meat, intensifying the smoke and smell.
"Gas," he said slowly. "Wait, you mean something flammable?"
His mind churned. Laura crouched down and opened the bottom of the box. Inside it was a big metal container with bright labels on it. Nathan stared at it.
This is full of propane gas, Laura said. You could get other ones, like electric ones. But Dad always used to rant about how gas was the only way to grill.
Those were the days, Maura said, her voice dripping with disdain.
Oh, absolutely. Loved coming back home to a house that smelled of booze, cigarettes, and the 50 women he'd fucked since we last saw him.
Laura smirked.
He made good burgers, though. The best.
Nathan ignored the twins as his mind tried to comprehend what he was staring at. If this gas is flammable, what would happen if... Nathan snapped his fingers, staring at the canister. Everybody stared at him.
Then Kadria laughed. Well, somebody is getting ideas for cruel new weapons. What, did you tire of your flesh-eating flood? Or the explosive geyser minefield?
This is stable, right? But if something sets it off... Nathan licked his lips. The problem with catapults was that he'd never come up with a type of ammunition that worked well enough. If he flung these at enemies, and they could explode, then...
I'm going to close this, Laura said, doing exactly that.
What? Not looking forward to him ramming one of those inside you next time you fight him?
Kadria cackled.
Maybe I should teach him some chemistry. Show him the real way to have some fun.
That's not fair. We're treating him to hamburgers, and he's learning how to blow us to pieces next time we want to have some fun with him.
Laura whined.
If, Maura muttered. Can't say I'm too keen on being blown apart.
She smirked at him. Her free hand wandered over his crotch, which was still bulging from the presence of all the nearby succubi.
And he's so willing that I think we can have fun with him any time we want, Maura added.
Laura rolled her eyes.
Sure, we can fuck, but that's different. I want to see the look on that catgirl's face when I ride him in front of her.
You're that keen to be chopped in half again? Nathan asked.
Ooh, is that what you're into? I figured you to be the vanilla type, but with the added thrill of lots of hot, steamy babes.
Laura pressed herself against him. He felt her hot breath on his ear as her hand slipped inside his pants and stroked his prick.
But if you're up for something a bit more hardcore, we can do that as well. A bit of domination play with you and your pet. Maybe hang us on the wall.
Honestly, the pair of you are worse than that horse girl, Kadria interrupted.
She glared at the twins, who stuck their tongues out in return, but the busty succubi pulled away from Nathan.
A raised eyebrow and smirk from Kadria caused him to slip his cock back into his pants. He didn't want any hot grease getting onto it. That would hurt. A lot. He knew from experience.
I thought you were making hamburgers out of meat. Not yourselves, Kadria said. The twins tilted their heads in confusion. Kadria held her hands up.
The two of you are the bun, and his dick is the meat.
Oh, the twins said together.
I can't believe you didn't get that.
We fuck. You can keep the metaphors.
Maura rolled her eyes and checked on the bottom of one of the meat patties.
Plus, I think ground dick would taste pretty bad.
Nathan pretended she hadn't said that.
You really are as bad as the horse girl, Kadria groaned.
Nathan frowned and stepped away from the succubi. Laura pouted at him, but took the opportunity to summon more food. Bread rolls, pickles, and strange colorful containers appeared on a small wooden table. Nathan didn't have the slightest clue what any of them were, so he simply watched as he stood next to Kadria.
Does fire bother you? He asked.
Oh?
Why do you assume I'm talking about her? Isn't there a far more important horse in your life? A certain unicorn that you've been avoiding thinking about? Kadria smirked. He scowled at her. Do you need to be intentionally annoying?
No, but it's more enjoyable. Tweedledee and Tweedledum took away my shtick of flirting with you and rubbing your cock. So I need to be the bitch, she said.
Nathan rubbed the bridge of his nose. He suspected those nicknames were insulting, but he didn't recognize them. You are talking about fire, though, he pressed.
Maybe. She's an interesting specimen. Whenever you enter the same room as her, it's like everything else ceases to exist. Terrifying is perhaps the word I'd use for her, Kadria replied.
She poked Nathan in the stomach.
But even if she convinced you to bed her, I suspect you'd only use her as a substitute for your adorable little unicorn. Why not simply ask Kiana to join you?
Nathan scowled. Unbidden, memories rose to the forefront of his mind.
Ah, Kadria said, her smirk vanishing.
Don't do that, he snapped.
Succubi, Mora drawled from nearby. And we're all good ones. We can't turn our shit off, you know. Your emotions just bubble up to the surface and we see them, like little clouds around your head.
Frowning, Nathan tried to change the topic. But I could learn mental defenses to stop that.
Not against us, even with decades of experience. We are succubi, Kadria said.
Then she raised an eyebrow.
Why does the unicorn bother you so much? I already recognize two of your former trigems, and you don't even feel the slightest pang about sending them into danger.
A chill ran down Nathan's spine. The red and violet eyes staring at him held a gentle expression, but they belonged to a monster. Kadria had killed all of his champions in his world. Both Narime and Yefela had died at her hands.
You remember them, but not what happened afterwards? He asked Kadria slowly.
She raised an eyebrow, then pursed her lips.
My record of your world isn't that perfect. Things happened quickly once I broke into your fortress, she said.
She died, protecting me, he said flatly.
None of the messengers said anything. The meat crackled on the grill. A loud spitting sound and the clack of metal on metal indicated that Mora was removing the meat.
And didn't all of them? Mora said.
He scowled at her. She rolled her eyes as she dropped a metal platter of meat onto the table. Her red and black eyes pierced him.
The whole tortured, edgy hero thing is cute in a way. Laura fantasizes over that shit. But you're not going to get any sympathy from us, Mora said, hands on her hips. People die. You have a new unicorn now. Do you know the things people would do for the chance you have? If I could redo my old life, I wouldn't waste time worrying about things going wrong. I'd just fucking kill every person on my list.
You'd use the same list for both killing and sex? Kadria asked.
Mora paused. I guess I'd need three lists. One for killing, one for fucking, one for both.
Next to her, Laura finished preparing whatever she was making. She had put the meat patty between both halves of the bread, slathered pickles and what looked like relishes on them, and then closed the whole thing up.
Hamburger time, Laura said, carrying it over to him.
Nathan took the opportunity to leave the difficult topic behind. Mora's words had given him something to chew on, however. He disliked the way she put it. Kiana wasn't a toy that could be replaced. She had died, and the one in this world was an entirely different person. But she was right that worrying about the past didn't help him in the future. He picked up the hamburger in both hands and stared at it. So it's like a sandwich? He asked.
A burger is not a sandwich, Laura said, annoyed.
Sure, Nathan thought. He bit into the burger. He chewed, then froze. Holy shit, he mumbled around a mouthful of sauce and meat.
Oh, man, that was definitely a face to snap a pic of, Mora said with a grin. Good thing we have photographic memories after changing. Gonna have fun remembering this one.
He swallowed and stared at the hamburger. Technically, it wasn't that amazing by itself. He had eaten meat patties like it. The bread roll was similar to what he'd eaten before, and the relish was extremely salty and sugary compared to what he was used to. But all combined, it made for a meal unlike anything that he had ever eaten. He demolished it, while the twins giggled at him and nibbled at their own burgers. Kadria watched.
Going to ask nicely for one? Laura teased. Maybe if you bend over and let us watch Nathan rail you, we'll serve you a fresh one.
Kadria rolled her eyes. She held up a hand and a wholly formed burger appeared in it. There was lettuce on it, and the relish was white, but it was definitely a burger.
It won't taste the same, Laura pouted.
Yes, and all the better, Kadria drawled. After all, this burger wasn't cooked in your love juices. Nathan froze mid-bite.
Fucking what? Ha, huh, we should try that next time, Mora said.
She pulled down her shorts, revealing her bare slit, which was dripping wet.
Although I think cooking oil works a lot better.
Thank fuck.
Nathan swallowed his bite and glared at Kadria. They polished off the food. Nathan tried to summon a wooden chair to sit in, but the moment he began to focus his power, the entire world shimmered.
No, no, no! Laura screamed. Don't do that!
He stopped, and the world returned to normal.
That didn't happen last time, he said.
Laughing, Kadria summoned a chair for him.
How come she could do it, and he couldn't?
Well, he wasn't particularly good at using his ascended magic to manipulate reality in her mental world. He had been improving.
This isn't their mental world. It's the same thing as my room, Kadria said.
The twins ran around the little fenced garden, poking at the fake walls as if to test that they weren't going to fall down.
A frontier fortress for their minds, Nathan said, remembering her explanation. So why did everything go wonky when I tried to do something?
Because it's hooked into your mind.
Unlike me, the twins don't have anywhere near the influence over you. You voluntarily let me in when we made our pact. They snuck into your binding stone and are essentially a parasite. While they are here, you are far more powerful. Kadria grinned.
I shouldn't tell you this, given we're all messengers, but this is the perfect time to make them your plaything.
Nathan looked at the twins. They chattered to each other as they repaired a hole in a fence. It looked like a black void had appeared. Neither of them looked threatening.
Against his better judgment, Nathan said, "If they attack again, I'll consider it."
How soft of you, Kadria said.
Allies can be more beneficial than enemies. I'd be careful of ever considering them allies. That requires them to be capable of conscious thought.
He rolled his eyes. Despite Kadria's constant insult, Nathan didn't feel the twins were that stupid.
And are they really a threat? Nathan asked.
If they had the power, they'd turn you into their toy in an instant, Kadria said, her eyes narrowing.
Don't allow their blather and massive tits to let you forget that.
I am working with you. They find you amusing.
But they don't have the power.
No, especially not now. You've stabilized the world too much.
"That's why I'm here," she said. With a flick of her wrist, Kadria summoned a physical map of Domar. It floated next to them. Sensing that something was happening, the twins ran over. They bounced up and down on their heels, which caused their chests to do very distracting things inside their tight tops.
"Wow, I don't think I've seen the Empire that big in ages," Mora said. "Is that why we can't use the portal anymore?"
"What?" Nathan asked, eyebrows shooting up.
Yeah, lap it up. Even with a cascade, we probably couldn't appear again right now. The activity level has dropped super hard."
Mora scowled.
"It'd need to be a huge cascade, like the one that we used last time. Some big external event."
"Why external?" Nathan asked. "Don't the portals generate their own energy?"
"Because messengers are beings of disruption," Kadria said. "You've stabilized Domar by stopping the current wars. The Empire has conquered the Federation and scared Trafoam into a ceasefire. Without chaos, we don't have any cracks to slip through."
Nathan frowned. "But that's only going to make things worse, isn't it? Arcadia is still in turmoil. The spires are angry over the cascade that happened, and the Empire is on the verge of civil war. There are plenty of ways to create chaos for you."
"Unfortunately, yes. I had hoped that you would be able to settle matters, and then we could slowly build up our influence in the world."
Kadria bit her lip and stared at the map.
"But I underestimated the contingencies put in place to prevent stability."
A memory from a past conversation clicked in Nathan's mind. "Those super powerful magical beings you mentioned? The ones that exist between worlds?" Laura and Mora gawked at him, then at Kadria.
"You told him about our boss? Seriously?"
"You all work for the same person?" Nathan asked, surprised, given the animosity they showed toward each other.
"Person is a relative term," Mora said dryly. "Describing what we work for hurts my head. He can appear as whatever or whoever he likes. He's not even a he, really. We just call him that because that's what he shows himself as to us."
"What's his name?" Nathan asked.
"Something you don't need to know," Kadria said. The twins nodded. "Names hold power. It's wise not to speak those of the truly powerful," Kadria said, her expression darkening.
"But he's trying to destabilize the world," Nathan said. "I take it I should be worried?"
"You should be preparing. Fortunately, you are. And you're suppressing panic at the same time. Right now, chaos is your enemy."
"Are we allowed to say that?" Laura asked aloud. "I think chaos is our ally."
Kadria rolled her eyes.
"Stop being paranoid. If anything was going to happen to us, it would have already happened. But my point is that you need to prevent major disruptions to the world for as long as possible. Build up your strength, forge alliances, and prepare for war. Because the next move will be one intended to destroy the world."
"Just like when the demons poured out from Garrick Pass in my world," Nathan said.
"Exactly. We don't know when or what the move will be, only that it will be big." Kadria smiled. "Fortunately, I'm making a move of my own to help you."
"Huh? But even we can't appear. How can you possibly do anything?" the twins asked.
"That is a secret."
Kadria's red eyes twinkled, but her attention fixed on Nathan. She pressed her foot into Nathan's crotch.
"But it's one that I'm sure you'll love when the day comes for me to reveal it, Nathan. Oh, it will be a truly fun and exciting day."
He took a step back, and the twins smirked. Changing the subject, he asked them something that had been bothering him.
You've all met your boss? Does that mean you were Bastions once, in your original world?
Nathan asked. All three succubi blinked. Then the twins laughed.
Holy shits! You think we could be Bastions?
Mora asked, desperately trying to talk between peals of laughter.
Wow! And Kadria thinks we're dumb!
Laura grinned.
You're like the literal opposite of us, cutie.
So you were villains, even in your world?
He was confused.
Nope.
He blinked, not sure what they meant. Mora flicked her hair over one shoulder.
You're a larger-than-life hero type, so maybe you don't get it. But we were nobodies. Bastions, champions, messengers. They're the type of people that change the course of worlds. The opposite of a hero is a nobody. A random person going about their life, coming home to find their deadbeat dad fucking a prostitute in their bed, and nobody gives a flying fuck.
That's why we're messengers, Laura said. We got offered a deal to become someone that mattered. The boss even threw in the chance to blow our dad's head off and have some real fun before we left. Most messengers are like us, stuck in a dead-end world, with the best part of our life behind us, and no control over the future. Bet you don't know how that feels, huh?
Nathan felt frozen in place.
But hey, we get to have some fun together this time.
Laura winked at him.
It's pretty nice to be with a Bastion like this. I've forgotten what good male company is like.
He tuned the twins out as they began to bicker over something minor. Slowly, he turned to stare at Kadria. She smiled back at him, but her eyes were razor sharp.
Is something wrong, Nathan? She crooned.
He shook his head. At some point, Mora had given him another hamburger. He didn't notice when. Looking around himself, he took in the absurdity of the situation. He was standing in some sort of strange fantasy world. Three succubi talked about random things around him and were sexually interested in him. He had forsaken his goddess and traveled to a new world to save it. Laura's description of her old life struck a chord with him. Couldn't he describe his life like hers? Isn't that why Kadria's offer had been so appealing? He had already failed by the time she attacked. As much as he had loved those around him, the world itself had been ruined. He had more regrets than he had cherished memories. He took a bite of his burger and stared at Kadria. A part of him felt very stupid as he finally realized what Kadria had been doing all this time. She was recruiting him.
Chapter 6
Remind me again why you brought me here?
Narime asked Nathan as she peered out the window at the densely packed buildings around them.
Because I'm not going anywhere near a political discussion without you and your centuries of experience, he replied, leaning against the back of the carriage.
While I'm touched, have you forgotten that I'm a mystic fox? My kind aren't well liked this far west.
She shook her six voluminous tails for effect, and their silvery fluffiness captured his attention. Narime was a mystic fox, and had silver fox ears and tails to prove it. Her slim, buxom frame accentuated her exotic appearance, particularly as she wore a figure-hugging black dress. Nathan sat inside a carriage with her and Sen, another of his champions. More carriages trundled in front and behind them. Each was driven by magic and required no driver, but there were guards posted on each one. Summer had arrived. With the amount of work that Nathan had, the weeks had passed in the blink of an eye.
Farmers began to harvest the first crop as the weather warmed. The first construction projects were in full swing. Trade caravans bustled across the roads of Garrick Duchy, as Anna called her new territory. The turmoil simmered, at least in Nathan's lands. By far the best news was the ceasefire with Trefome. The Empire's war against its northern neighbor was entering its third year now, with little ground gained on either side. The ceasefire only lasted for 3 months, long enough for both sides to argue over peace terms, but it allowed the soldiers to go home and rest. That also meant that the summer session of the Diet would be busy. The Diet was where nobles gathered to argue about and vote on matters that affected the entire empire. Chief among those were military affairs and the nobility as a whole, both matters that the nobles were deeply upset about, following the war with the Federation and its annexation. Nathan was traveling to Alaic with Anna to help her with the Diet. He hated politics, but couldn't ignore them this time. The last time he had ignored politics, the princess he supported had been overthrown, and he had been exiled to the far reaches. "Given how badly the nationalists hate me, I don't think you can possibly make things worse," Nathan said. "And I'll need your advice. Things are getting complicated. I can handle military affairs, but I'm about as good at politics as I am at dancing."
"Really?"
Sen chirped from a corner of the carriage. She leaned backward to avoid Nadime's shifting tails. Unlike Nadime, Sen was both human and lacked any gems. She wasn't a champion in the truest sense, but Nathan considered her one. Her brown hair was streaked with dense patches of white. She looked around with bright red eyes, her lithe-toned figure hidden beneath her baggy red cloak.
"I heard there are lots of balls held while the Diet was on. I figured to buy a dress with Anna. Does that mean we need to get you dance lessons?"
Sen asked, eyes bright.
"Yes, Nathan, do we?"
Narime grinned.
"I can waltz," he said. "How manly,"
Narime said.
"Are there manly dances?"
Nathan countered.
"Back in Kurai, there was a long history of,"
Narime began to say. He rolled his eyes, realizing his mistake, as she began a familiar spiel. "Yes, you've told me before. Warrior dances, courting dances, the plays with dances. I don't think I've ever seen them, but dancing is definitely different here." Nadime stared at Nathan, her brow furrowed in confusion. Her tails curled around herself. Next to her, Sen's eyes widened, and she subtly waved her hands over her lap in a stop motion.
"I'm certain I've never told you about this part of Kurai,"
Nadime said.
"The festivals, plays, and courting rituals are unique, and something I deeply miss. But our conversations have been more limited."
Her eyes pierced him. Shit. He'd mixed up the knowledge from his world with this world. Nadime was nearly identical between the two. Separating memories of her between the two worlds turned out to be difficult for Nathan. He often relied on contextual clues, but Nadime had taught him so much that it was impossible not to slip up.
"Maybe Seraph did," Nathan tried. "Uh-huh."
Nadime's expression returned to normal, faster than he expected.
"I should invite you to one of the harvest festivals that my kin are holding. There are fewer of us here than I'd like, but they have established villages in the chillier parts of the Federation."
"Empire,"
Sen corrected. Nadime rolled her eyes.
"Yes, yes, I know. We need to come up with a proper name for the former Federation territories. Most people still call it the Federation."
While Sen and Narime bantered, Nathan settled into an uncomfortable silence. He worried about the true cause of Narime's backdown over his slip-up. Only a few of his champions knew the truth about Nathan and the fact he had come from another world. Sen was one of them. He had overwritten the Sen from this world with the Sen from his original world. The same was true of another champion, Sunstorm. Faye also knew the gist of it. She had worked it out and confronted Nathan, and was now part of the trio of girls that held secret tea parties in Garrick Pass. They probably didn't hold tea parties, Nathan figured, but he knew they talked about him in hushed whispers, and liked to gang up on him in bed to an extent they had been hesitant to do before.
"I'm surprised you didn't bring Faye," Sen said, rousing Nathan from his thoughts. "She's always by your side."
"Somebody needs to protect the portals, and Faye is trusted and powerful," he replied. "Plus, things are more political than military here. She'd do little more than look cute."
"So why am I here?" Sen asked with a raised eyebrow. "I'm a bandit girl with a magical spirit in her head. My talent is setting things on fire, and I'm pretty sure I'll get in trouble if I do that to any dickhead nobles."
Nathan briefly entertained himself at the thought of letting Sen cast one of her spells while the diet was in session. "Yes, don't do that," he said dryly.
"So?" she pressed.
"You use magic, and being possessed by Ifrit gives you more cachet than you think," Nathan said. "And, to be blunt, you're human. I need some muscle."
"So that's me and Sunstorm," Sen nodded with a smirk. "And it totally has nothing to do with having us together, huh?"
Her expression turned lewd. "It won't," Narime said flatly.
"Nathan has been given a room in the palace, while the rest of us will be staying with Anna at a property that Archduke von Milgar has set aside."
"Wait, so no fun times with Nathan at all?" Sen whined. "That's dumb. Nathan, stay with us and Anna."
"I'll visit," he said with a smirk. Then his expression turned serious. "But one of you will be staying with me in the palace anyway. There's a reason I'm staying there. Things are..." The carriage juddered to a sudden halt, and Nathan nearly bit his tongue. Sen flew forward, and he snapped an arm out to catch her. As if by instinct, she rolled onto his lap. In the silence of the carriage, the commotion outside grew almost deafening. It sounded as if a huge crowd surrounded them. Shouting filtered into the carriage. For a moment, Nathan thought they were under attack, and his hand flew to his sword. Then he calmed down. He heard chatter, including that of the guards outside the carriage. Nobody screamed. There certainly wasn't any combat taking place.
"Looks like there's some traffic," Narime said.
She sighed.
"This is why I hate taking carriages. Any time a crash happens or somebody argues at a toll, everything backs up. Walking is so much easier."
"Can't you teleport?" Sen said.
"She can," Nathan said as he stood up. "She can also run faster than most carriages."
"It's not my fault that your carriages are so slow."
He shook his head. Reaching for his magic, he checked his surroundings. Nobody was casting spells, and nothing seemed awry. He sensed champions and bastions nearby, but that was normal, given the diet was about to come into session.
"Nathan,"
Narime and Sen asked together. They had sensed what he had done.
"We're in the middle of a lake in carriages belonging to a duchess," he explained. "I don't like this."
"Does being noble usually allow you to avoid traffic in the Empire?"
Narime asked.
"Yes," he said.
Then he opened the window and stuck his head out. A line of carriages, almost 10 deep, sat unmoving in front of him. Nathan couldn't see the cause, but he saw a gatehouse from one of Alaik's inner walls and immediately grew suspicious. Unlike many cities, Alaik lacked tolls or inspections. The city sprawled across the countryside. There technically was a small river system here, but Alaik had converted it into canals and sewage so long ago that not even history knew what waterways were natural and which were artificial. That sprawl was broken up by those waterways and a number of inner walls. Alaik's design was so chaotic that Nathan had heard of people going mad because they got lost down an alleyway.
"I don't think we should be stopped here," he said.
"You're telling us," a nearby guard said. He wore Anna's uniform. A black strip of cloth was wrapped around his upper arm, covering the beastkin crest Nathan knew was on his armor.
Nobody seems to know what's going on.
Anna had brought a couple dozen guards and some beastkin knights with her, and they were all alert. They stood around the carriages, chewing on tobacco and chatting amiably with some of the passers-by. But all of them had their hands on or close to their weapons. The gathering crowd consisted of middle-class types, merchants, laborers, and the aspirational classes. Nathan saw more than a few beastkin among them. To them, the traffic was a distraction from the monotony of the day. Vendors sent staff out to the carriages with baskets full of goods. A pair of young cat girls walked down the line, selling woodcrafts and other baubles. An armor polisher tried to talk some guards into paying for his services. At least one prostitute showed up, and Nathan saw a few people slip away into nearby alleyways. He looked back and saw Anna's carriage behind his. A head poked out from it and looked familiar. Fire's expression was wary, and far sharper than Nathan was used to as she surveyed the area. Then she saw Nathan, and her face lit up with the warped fascination he expected from her. She waved to him, her red eyes practically glittering with excitement. While he had wanted to compliment her awareness of the situation, he now felt it was a bad idea to say as much. Fire's head might explode if he actually said anything nice about her to her face.
"I'm going to take a look," Nathan said.
"Not without us," Narime growled.
The three of them slipped out of the carriage. The guards saluted perfunctorily, but they were used to him after days of traveling. The glamour of being so close to Bastion Nathan had worn off fast when he made it a point to chat with them every day. A clicking on the smooth stone signaled Fire's arrival. She beamed at Nathan, her tail wagging behind her like a dog's.
"Sunstorm is with Anna," he confirmed.
He doubted Fire would leave her liege alone, but wanted to be certain.
"Of course, my lord," Fire said. "She is far more capable of defending against assassins than I am, so we felt it best that she remain with Anna."
That was the reason Sunstorm was in Anna's carriage to begin with. Sunstorm only had a single onyx gem. Her olive skin was proof of her heritage from the Kurai Peninsula. Unlike Nathan's other champions, Sunstorm wasn't trained as a warrior. She was an assassin. Poisoning, stealth, infiltration, espionage, counter-espionage, and, Sunstorm's favorite, killing, were her tools of the trade. For most bastions, an assassin wasn't that useful. They fought armies of demons. Sunstorm specialized in killing humans, even if her gems made her strong enough to defend portals as well. But Nathan valued Sunstorm's abilities, especially right now.
"I don't see how standing outside helps us, Nathan," Narime said. "Or do you want to see what's holding us up?"
He frowned. He could do that, but staring at Anna's carriage, which was now defended only by a monogem champion and some guards, he realized how dangerous that was. A Laic should be safe, but it was crawling with bastions and champions from all over the Empire right now, not least of which were Tarbans.
"I figure I'll do what normal people do and ask," Nathan said.
Then he took a few steps away from the carriage and gave a gentle wave and a smile at a small crowd of merchants nearby. They looked local. None of them tried to hawk their goods, and instead huddled together while they chattered and watched.
"Afternoon," Nathan said as he approached. "You used to seeing this sort of thing by now?"
A couple of the merchants eyed him warily, their gazes shooting to his uniform, and especially the bastion emblem. But the rest gave him a friendly enough greeting. The sort of greeting that made it clear that conversation was welcome, so long as he didn't pry or try to throw his weight around.
"Normally, no," a reedy-looking man said.
He clicked his tongue.
"But there's a mob of guards that have set up in the gatehouse recently. They're stopping carriages, for security reasons." "It's a mess, is what it is," a matronly woman said,
wearing finer clothes than the others.
We have to get deliveries early morning and night, and we get charged extra.
She eyed Nathan.
I assume you're involved in this?
Given there aren't supposed to be checkpoints in the city, no, he said.
Not like that, she said. This!
She waved a hand, as if to gesture to the city as a whole.
Those guards aren't working for His Majesty. It's dumb politics.
Nathan blinked.
Of course he's involved in it, a deeper voice said. He caused it all.
A bare-chested beastkin stared at him. He had a pair of thick horns and was covered in ash. A blacksmith or metal worker, probably. Next to Nathan, Fire took a step forward, her face twisting. Nathan stopped her.
I'm a bastion in service to His Majesty and the Watcher Omria, he said. If things fall apart because I do my duty, then maybe that says something about those responsible.
The eyebrows of the merchants shot up.
Maybe it does, the beastkin blacksmith said. I'd prefer to work in peace. And I'd like a world without demons, so I could retire, Nathan drawled. Sometimes we deal with shit, so that we can enjoy the better days.
Before the argument could continue, Nathan bid farewell and turned away. He had his answer, which was that this appeared to be some sort of political play. Once back at the carriages, he looked around again. Nobody had moved. The line had more than doubled in length by now. If this was an inspection, it was the slowest one that Nathan had seen.
This is a trap, Narime said.
Nathan looked at her. A huff escaped her, and her tails batted at him, tickling him with their fluffiness.
I'm allowed to admit that you were right, aren't I? She said,
raising an eyebrow as she drowned him with her tails.
Do I get rewarded like this every time I'm right? He said.
He ran a hand through one of her luxurious fluff balls. Narime squeaked, and her tails retreated. Her glower suggested he had gone too far, at least in public. He privately reserved some time in his calendar to comb those tails with his hands. No way was he letting her tempt him with them, then get away without a fluffing.
One day I'm going to convince Ifrit to teach me a spell that gives me a tail, Sen said.
Fire tilted her head in confusion. A moment later, she perked up, and her tail nearly whirred behind her.
Needs some more fluff, Sen said,
noticing the horse girl's reaction. Fire pouted.
You don't need a tail, Sen, Nathan said.
Needs and wants are separate things, she replied,
her voice deepening as she did a bad imitation of Nathan.
Plus, Ifrit goes silent any time I talk about giving myself a tail.
Nathan stared at Sen. How perverted was Ifrit, if that was his reaction to Sen asking about a tail? Although, given Sen's preferences in bed, it might just work.
Oh, Sen said, eyes widening. I recognize that expression. That sort of tail.
By Omria,
Narime muttered, rubbing the bridge of her nose.
Perversions aside, these wagons aren't going anywhere. We're going to need to deal with this ourselves, Nathan.
He nodded, but he had already formed a plan while they joked around. Narime, Fire, I want the two of you to protect Anna in her carriage. Keep the door closed. His gaze fixed on Narime, and she frowned at him for a moment. Then she nodded. A smirk rose to her face as she led an excitable horse girl back to Anna's wagon. Surprisingly, Fire hadn't protested when he ordered her away. Sunstorm ducked out to replace her. The champion wore a form-fitting black leather outfit, with her only nod to the uniform being her jacket. A strip of black cloth covered her neck. Beneath it lay a single onyx, which provided her power. Her olive skin stood out compared to everybody on the street, but she paid no heed to the stares. Her black hair had grown out, and was wrapped in two small buns on either side of her head.
"Ready?" he asked.
Sunstorm responded by touching her pair of sheathed short swords. Sen gave her a shove.
"No killing," Sen said. "At least until you're told to."
"Boring." The three of them approached the gatehouse. The wall towered over them, but there wasn't much to see. In Alaik, the inner walls were no longer manned. They simply took up space. Crumbling stonework loomed over them, and vines stretched along the length of the wall. Even the gatehouse itself didn't function. The portcullises were jammed open with steel bars, as the mechanisms controlling them had rusted away centuries ago. Inside the gatehouse were a pair of large wagons laden with large crates. Bored guards stood next to the wagons, their uniforms bearing the insignia of some random noble. The exit was blocked by a crude wooden blockade, which was manned by several men in Imperial Army uniforms and armor. A pair of pompous merchants argued with a stocky officer, whose expression suggested he intended to be here all day. A mage stood next to them. Unlike the other guards, the mage appeared alert. His fingers drummed on his oaken staff as he kept a lookout. He was the first person to notice Nathan, and nodded in acknowledgement.
"I'd ask if something is wrong, but it's obvious at a glance that there is," Nathan said loudly as he approached. "The hell is going on, and on whose orders are you here?"
Nathan's voice had an almost magical effect. The merchants backed away, their mage muttering to them to retreat to the wagons. Onlookers crowded near the entrance, peering inside. The Imperial soldiers began to cluster around Nathan, but far enough away that they probably thought they were being subtle about it.
"I don't believe that's any of your business, my lord," the officer said, rubbing his knuckles against his breastplate. "Our orders aren't yours. Let us do our job, and you do yours."
"Cute," Nathan said, "but I'm a bastion and outrank you. Give me a reason to believe that you're here on official orders."
"Cute," the officer taunted, mimicking Nathan's tone with a smirk. "Do you have any proof of that? Fancy little crest aside, I don't know you. I don't take orders from nobodies."
The atmosphere shifted instantly. An eerie silence fell as the onlookers shut up. The mage's eyes widened, and he gestured for the merchants to move backward. Even the bored guards reacted. They fell into wary postures, hands on their weapons as they eyed the soldiers. Everybody knew what Nathan was, even if they didn't recognize him. Nobody impersonated a bastion. Not only was it treason and heresy, but it was an easily detectable lie. To magical senses, champions and bastions were like magical mountains, easily detectable even miles away, unless they hid themselves. Any magic user capable of lighting a candle without matches could confirm that Nathan was genuine. The soldiers stopped being subtle and began to close in around Nathan. Nobody moved to help him, probably because they didn't need to.
"I'm genuinely not sure if you're acting stupid to stall me, or if you are this dumb," Nathan said. "It's good acting if you are stalling, but too obvious."
"I don't know,"
Nathan drew his sword and pointed it at the officer's neck.
"My proof is obvious enough that everybody knows who and what I am. But why don't we walk you down to a local guard post and have them check you out?"
Before anything happened, screams and yells erupted far behind Nathan. The trap had sprung. He sighed and sheathed his sword. The officer stared at him dumbly. All the soldiers froze, weapons half raised, to rush Nathan.
"Sunstorm, deal with them," he said. "No killing."
Then he turned and walked back to his and Anna's carriages.
"You owe me a head after this," Sunstorm muttered.
Then she blinked forward, faster than normal eyes followed. Her first punch caved in the officer's breastplate. He flew into two other soldiers, bowling them over. Sunstorm didn't watch the fat officer take flight, however. She leaped from soldier to soldier, snapping out a kick or a punch for each one. Bones shattered, armor dented, and men screamed in agony as they were brutalized by a woman much smaller than them. Within seconds, Sunstorm had reduced the soldiers to a groaning pile of barely conscious wrecks.
"Maybe you should contact the real city guard," she said flippantly to the merchants and their guards.
She vanished in a puff of shadow, only to reappear next to Nathan. He ignored her, his teeth gritted as he hoped he hadn't made a mistake. Somebody had planned this out to kill Anna. For once, he wasn't the target. Chapter 7 Open battle had broken out near the carriages. People fled past Nathan. Nobody appeared to be injured, other than those that fell and hurt themselves. Guards from the other carriages watched the chaos, frozen with indecision. The cause was obvious. Anna's guards fought against the Imperial Army, or at least people wearing stolen Imperial uniforms. There were several dozen attackers, and most of them only wore parts of their uniforms, or had done a sloppy job putting them on. Crests and uniforms of other noble houses showed beneath the Imperial uniforms. Several onlookers were caught in the chaos. The catgirl merchants that had been walking up to the carriages huddled in a corner of the melee, hugging each other. Others had taken up arms and were battling the attackers. Nathan saw the beastkin blacksmith and several other burly beastkin battling alongside what looked to be private guards. Despite their efforts, the attackers were better trained, and the civilians started to go down.
"Sen," Nathan ground out.
"On it," she said.
Her eyes glowed as she raised a hand. A glowing red triangle appeared in front of it, a third-rank spell. A moment later, tendrils of pure flame ripped across the street. They shot over the shoulders of Anna's guards and the innocents, and only targeted the enemy. Over a dozen attackers found themselves engulfed in flames as the tendrils tore through them. They began to run away, screaming, but collapsed on the way. The tendrils instantly vanished, and Sen closed her hand.
"Shit," Sen said. "Too much. I forgot how fragile normal people are."
"Don't worry about it," Nathan said. He rushed forward. Raising his sword, he cast a fourth-rank spell. A glowing yellow square appeared around the tip of his blade. After several long, agonizing moments, lightning slammed into the center of the melee. At least one attacker screamed as he was blown away, but that wasn't the point. The point was to scare the shit out of everybody. The melee froze. The attackers faltered, looking over at Nathan to see him approaching with two champions.
"Falka, are we fucking done yet?"
one of the attackers yelled. He had a grizzled beard and seemed to be the leader. Nathan was almost certain that Falka was the surname of a nationalist noble. More importantly, Nathan looked over to where the ambush leader had yelled. A cloaked figure leaped away from Anna's carriage. The carriage had been blown open, and wreckage was strewn about the road. Fire charged after the figure, her garnets glowing like miniature suns. Garnets were a jack-of-all-trades gem and provided champions with a good mix of strength and durability. For many, they were the poor brother to diamond gems, which had a similar role. But Fire's scimitar glowed with a golden light, and she seemed to leave small after-images as she attacked. She must have some sort of gem ability, despite using garnets. The cloaked figure reeled under the attack. Their hands bristled with magic and were somehow able to deflect Fire's scimitar without being cut open. Very little could be seen other than the cloak. The hood covered their face in magical shadow. Then the figure blinked backward, not in a puff of shadow, but closer to short-range instant teleportation. Their cloak billowed outward for a moment. Nathan hissed.
He saw two gleaming opalescent gems in the figure's collarbone. More to the point, the figure was definitively female, given the notable curve to their chest. Under the cloak was the uniform of an imperial noble, likely Fulker's. He knew who this champion was. If she hadn't used both of her gem abilities, he might not have immediately recognized her. But while she hadn't been one of his champions in his world, he had fought alongside her many times, up until her death during the fall of Trefome. Like Sunstorm, she was a trained assassin. The assassin spotted Nathan and paused. At this point, she should retreat.
"Fulker!"
the ambush leader shouted. Fire charged the assassin, and she vanished, as expected. Then the assassin reappeared closer to Nathan, preparing to strike. In that instant, Nathan realized his mistake. He was a famous bastion, but far from his binding stones. Right now, he was protected by two champions, and about to be attacked by a duo-gem champion that specialized in killing. "Shit," he said. Power rose within him as he reached for his binding stones. He'd need to reinforce his body with spells and every ounce of magic that he could to keep up. Next to him, Sen prepared a pair of third-rank spells, while Sunstorm stepped in front of Nathan. Both of them were ready to defend their bastion.
"Folk!"
the ambush leader tried to say again, except he was interrupted by a short sword severing his head. The catgirl merchants from earlier rose to their feet. One held a gleaming short sword, and two gems glowed in her collarbone as she ripped off a cloth collar. The other pulled her sword out from inside a basket. Blood flew as the catgirls slaughtered a half dozen attackers. They charged the assassin, their gems glowing with power. With a quick glance at Nathan, the assassin vanished. Cursing, the catgirls whirled and checked their surroundings. But the assassin was nowhere to be seen. The remaining attackers were quickly subdued. Nathan noted that the catgirls didn't bother taking prisoners. They brutally executed anyone who resisted, their expressions now thunderous scowls. But enough of the attackers surrendered that there would be prisoners to deal with. The fighting stopped, and a crowd slowly began to build up again.
"You've stopped us, but we still won," one of them spat. "Your precious duchess is fucking dead. Some super bastion you are, huh?"
Discontent rose among the crowd. Some saw Anna's destroyed carriage and began to connect the dots. Fire bounced over to him.
"It's fine, my lord. You don't need to—" "He doesn't need to worry, because he's going to be the new duke? You hear that, folks?"
the man said. Fire and the catgirls glared at him, and Nathan suspected this was an intentional ploy at martyrdom. Fortunately, help arrived.
"If Nathan is becoming duke, it's certainly not because I'm dead," Anna said.
She stepped out from her ruined carriage, completely unharmed. Nadime followed her and gave Nathan a wink. The crowd clapped. To them, they'd seen a great magic trick. The attackers stared in disbelief. Moments later, Anna's guards and knights crowded around her. Her attempts to shoo them away failed. But word would spread in the city about what had happened.
"My lord, I saw his uniform. He was part of—"
Fire began to say, her tail wagging excitedly.
"A mercenary group," Nathan interrupted, speaking loudly enough to drown her out.
Fire stared at him in confusion.
"No, I mean—"
"Fire, shut up," Sunstorm said.
The horse girl opened her mouth to complain, but then shut it when Nathan shot her a look. She pouted.
"Mercenaries?"
one of the catgirl champions asked, approaching them. They toyed with their swords, probably because they didn't have a scabbard.
"Almost certainly. They've stolen uniforms from nobles and the Imperial Army. They're here to sow chaos in the Empire. There's a bunch more of them back in the gatehouse,"
Nathan said,
speaking far too loudly. He wanted the crowd to hear him. Then he lowered his voice. Until we confirm anything else, I think this is the best approach.
I've been hearing great things about you, Bastian Nathan, the cat girl said with a smile. It seems you live up to the stories.
She licked her lips and looked at his crotch.
Although I can't confirm some of them.
The other cat girl coughed and elbowed her partner.
We'll take over from here and do that confirming, sir. We're champions assigned to His Majesty's Defense Network.
Both catgirls showed him small silver badges that bore the mark of the Imperial Spymaster. Nathan briefly touched them and confirmed the magic in them was genuine, then nodded.
Thanks for the intervention, he said.
We'd hoped to take her down, but saving you will have to be good enough for our report,
the first catgirl said. She sighed.
Fucking paperwork. I'll try to get you an early copy of the report. I'm told you'll be in the palace.
Both catgirls saluted before leaving him alone.
Defense network? Sen asked. Spies, Sunstorm said flatly. I thought the bastion for a Lay-Eek was Malus.
She is. The spy.